Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we're going to be telling you about a snow jam resulting from that winter wonderland across East County, and we'll give you some wet weather travel tips as well. On our Capitol Report, we'll be telling you the latest on the controversy about the new House Whip who spoke to a white supremacist group. And if you're looking for a job, we'll have details about the sheriff recruiting for new positions. The CDC has declared a nationwide flu epidemic, and we'll have details on that. In Green Scene, hear why monarch butterflies may soon be declared an endangered species. Later today, we'll also be replaying our interview with Jack Hsu from the Cleveland National Forest Foundation about their lawsuit against Sandag and Sandag's appeal to the California Supreme Court over its regional transportation plan, and what that could mean for your health and our environment. On Destination East County, we'll have all the most fun things coming up to do across East County this week. And on Bookshelf, we'll be replaying Raina Menasche's interview with La Mesa Police Chief Dan Willis about his book, Bulletproof Spirit. So stay tuned for all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This week's snowstorm transformed much of East County into a winter wonderland. 9 inches of snow fell in Julian, and a full foot blanketed the top of Mount Laguna, with several inches all the way down to Descanso, KNSJ's hometown. The road to Julian has been plowed and cleared for travel, but over this holiday weekend that's led to traffic jams as snow-loving San Diegans headed to the mountains by the thousands. On Thursday afternoon, even Interstate 8 ground to a halt near the Sunrise Highway turnoff, and the historic mountain town of Julian became completely gridlocked, 10 News reports. Those fortunate enough to make it into town in Julian scrambled for parking and waited in lines of up to an hour outside the Julian Pie Company for one of those famous apple pies. But the tourism is good news for Julian merchants, who have been hard hit by multiple wildfires, including one that shut down the town's 4th of July parade and festivities last summer. Up in North County, Palomar Mountain got over a full foot of snow, and CHP had to shut down Highway 76 East due to traffic, also closing down North Grade and East Grade roads to Palomar to everybody who wasn't a resident. So if you do travel to the mountains, be patient and carry chains, which may still be required at the higher elevations on Mount Palomar and Mount Laguna. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
There's an old song that says, it never rains in Southern California, but when we do get rain or snow like this week's storm has brought, driving can become an adventure. This is Eberreno with some driving tips from San Diego County's Department of Public Works that will help make sure your rainy drive doesn't become a misadventure. Slow down. If you want to avoid an accident, the best thing to do is slow down. When it rains here in San Diego County, the California Highway Patrol routinely responds to more accidents than when it's dry. Remember, it takes longer to stop or adjust when roads are wet. Give yourself a little extra time for your travels. Also, turn on your headlights to comply with the law and to see better, and also make it easier for other drivers to see you. Try to drive toward the middle lanes as water tends to gather in outside lanes. This simple tip can help you avoid big puddles. Before it rains, you should always check your windshield wipers and replace them as needed so they actually keep the rain off your windshield and make it easier to see. Avoid driving through deep water and test your brakes if you pass through a water hazard to make sure they've dried out and are working properly. Nothing worse than trying to stop and not having any brakes. Also, give the cars in front of you extra distance. The spray from their vehicles, particularly from larger trucks and buses, can block your vision, and giving extra space to the guy in front of you also gives you more time to brake or adjust if you need to. Remember, try not to brake too hard in the rain, as that can cause a hydroplane. A hydroplane is when your car begins to skid as your tires have lost traction on the wet road. If you start to hydroplane, remember, keep calm and don't panic. The Department of Motor Vehicles says don't oversteer and don't stomp on the brakes. Keep steering the wheel straight and take your foot off the accelerator so your vehicle can slow down slowly. In heavy rains, never cross a flooded roadway if you can't see the pavement. Even a few inches of water running at the right velocity can sweep a car or a truck and its occupants off the roadway and downstream. Even if you're in a giant monster truck, don't try it. Defog your windows for better visibility. Use your car's defroster. Make sure that you can see clearly because rain can cause your windows to fog up more easily. Also, stay focused. Remember, it's illegal and dangerous to try to text or use a handheld cell phone while you're driving. So you don't want to be doing that in the rain. Those split seconds count even more when the roads are wet. So don't get distracted by devices. And if you have to travel where you have to drive in snow, keep up with weather reports to see if tire chains are required. 130 drivers were trapped in San Bernardino Mountains just during this last storm. Also, keep some extra safety equipment in your car. Keep those chains handy. You need them. Also, watch out for public works, crews, and equipment. And don't stop or park in the roadway. Chain controls, road condition updates, and other safety advisories are posted on the Department of Public Works Facebook and Twitter sites. Be safe.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Capitol Report. The new Republican whip in Congress, Steve Scalise of Louisiana, is drawing scrutiny amid revelations that he spoke to a white supremacist group in 2002 that was founded by David Duke, a former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. Scalise has admitted speaking at a convention of the European American Unity and Rights Organization, or EURO, but claims he wasn't aware of its racist views despite the fact that it has been listed as a hate group by civil rights organizations. He has said he spoke to the group while building support for legislation and that he now considers it a mistake that he regrets. I emphatically oppose the divisive racial and religious views groups like these hold, he claims. The group's website, whitecivilrights.com, has been taken down off the Internet. However, a search of the Internet Archives, or Wayback Machine site, by East County Magazine found many copies of the website from 2002, the year Scalise spoke. The About Us page included a letter from David Duke. The home page included various press releases and statements that made clear the group espoused racist and anti-Semitic views. It includes statements by Duke supporting eugenics, a concept embraced by the Nazis to selectively breed a master race, blaming Jews for the 9/11 attack, and calling for the repeal of hate crime laws. Duke has claimed he didn't know Scalise. However, a roll call report from 1999 suggests Scalise knew Duke well, CNN reports. Both men were considered potential contenders in a House special election, and Scalise claimed he was the more electable and seemed to be appealing to potential Duke voters, without disavowing a racist beliefs of Duke. Scalise stated back then, "The voters in this district are smart enough to realize that they need to get behind someone who not only believes in the issues they care about, but can also get elected. Duke has proven that he can't get elected, and that's the first and most important thing." House Speaker John Boehner says he continues to have full confidence in Scalise, the third-ranked House Republican, and he believes he should keep his leadership position despite revelations that he spoke to a white supremacist group 12 years ago. Boehner insists Scalise is a man of high integrity and good character. Criticism of Scalise has come from both sides of the aisle. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee Press Secretary Josh Sherwin, in a blistering statement, observed that Scalise chose to cheerlead for a group of KKK members and neo-Nazis at a white supremacist rally. He denounced the Republican leadership in the House for its silence, adding that the Republican leadership has a history of embracing anti-Semitic racist hate groups. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi spokesman Drew Hamill suggests the GOP's backing of Scalise reflects a troubling undercurrent of racism in the grand old party. He observes, "Just this year, House Republicans have refused to restore the Voting Rights Act or pass comprehensive immigration reform." But Louisiana's only Democratic member of Congress, Cedric Richmond, an African-American, says he has seen Scalise work for the benefit of black people and white people and doesn't believe he is a racist. Sherwin said the incident made it clear their leadership has a history of embracing anti-Semitic racist hate groups. Eric Erickson, a conservative red state blogger, has criticized Scalise and suggested it's not plausible that he wasn't fully aware of the group's racist views when he agreed to speak. How the hell does somebody show up at a David Duke organized event in 2002 and claim ignorance? John Weaver, a political consultant who advised the presidential campaigns of Republican Senator John McCain, says he believes that Scalise cannot serve in leadership in our party, as we're in the process of trying to show the American people we can handle the burden of governing, especially in a country so divided across all demographic lines. The House leadership continues to stand behind Scalise, but has distanced itself from another disgraced member, Michael Grimm of New York, who pled guilty last week to federal tax evasion charges.
The San Diego Sheriff's Office is now hiring. Recruitment for sworn positions will open for 10 days in January. It means you can apply online for the position and register to take the written exam. Open recruitment begins on Friday, January 2nd through Monday, January 12th. Just go to www.joinsdsheriff.net if you'd like to apply. For questions about the application process, you can call 858-974-2000. The Sheriff's Department also has job opportunities for professional staff. Detention facilities are looking for nurses. For questions about the application process or qualifications, you can call 858-974-2687. Open recruitment for nurses closes January 13th. In addition, there are jobs available for emergency dispatchers or 911 operators. Applicants for all of these positions will be required to complete a comprehensive background investigation. This has been a public service announcement for the County of San Diego.
This is Leon Thompson with the Health Report. The United States Centers for Disease Control has declared a flu epidemic following a high number of flu cases diagnosed, as well as the deaths of 15 children from influenza. Officials urge people to get a flu shot, but the shot may not fully protect against this year's most prevalent strain, which has been mutating into more virulent forms after the vaccine was formulated. So far, the rogue version of the virus has primarily shown up in eastern and midwest states, but it's expected to reach the west coast soon. Health experts recommend washing your hands frequently with soap and water and avoiding people who are obviously sick and coughing. If you do get the flu, the County of San Diego's Health Department advises staying home for at least 24 hours after your fever is gone to avoid infecting others. Drink plenty of clear liquids, including soup and water, to stay hydrated, and avoid beverages with alcohol or caffeine while you're ill. Treatment is available, including new antiviral medications, so call your doctor if you are very ill. The county recommends a flu vaccine for everyone over 6 months of age. The flu vaccine is available at doctor's offices and pharmacies. If you don't have medical insurance, you can go to a county public health center to get vaccinated. For a list of locations, visit sdiz.org or call 211.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Monarch butterflies may warrant protection under the U.S. Endangered Species Act, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service states. Monarch populations have dropped up to 90% in the last 20 years due to a loss of milkweed plants that the butterflies need to lay their eggs and nourish caterpillars that emerge from cocoons. Loss of milkweed plants is linked to the increase of genetically engineered crops that are herbicide resistant but kill native vegetation, including milkweed, conservation groups report. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife plans a year-long review to determine whether monarchs should be added to the list of federally protected species. A petition seeking endangered species status from monarchs was submitted by the Xerces Society. The annual migration of monarch butterflies from Canada and the eastern United States to Mexico, thousands of miles to the south, is one of nature's most dazzling spectacles. But the number of butterflies counted in the Mexico wintering grounds has fallen sharply, alarming wildlife experts. Logging and use of pesticides in monarch habitat along the Pacific coast and Mexico are also factors, as well as development that has destroyed habitat. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barretta.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Next up, we're going to replay our interview with Jack Hsu, the head of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, recorded earlier this month, about their lawsuit challenging Sandag's regional transportation plan and Sandag's recently announced decision to appeal the case to the California Supreme Court. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we're going to be talking about transportation issues across San Diego County. My special guest is Jack Hsu, who is the president of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Now, your organization filed a lawsuit against the San Diego Association of Governments challenging the regional transportation plan. Two courts, Superior Court and then the Appellate Court, have both upheld your position on this. And now, as of last week, SANDAG has voted 20-1 to file an appeal to the California Supreme Court. Let's start with some background for our listeners. Why did the Cleveland National Forest Foundation file the lawsuit? What was wrong with the regional transportation plan?
Well, first, you know, the forest is under threats from many factors, and urban sprawl is being one of them, climate change being another. These are the real threats to the forest today and into the future. So we want to address those issues. And in doing that, we believe sound urban planning, good city building is a key to that, to really save the forest. And I can elaborate on that some more, but if you really think about it, you know, climate change is going to wipe out our forest, completely destroy it.
Yeah, we're already seeing impacts out there with the bark-boring beetles coming in and a lot of dead trees.
Right. Correct. And the other is urban sprawl. That's what's taking away animal habitat, crucial habitat. And that's happening because we're not planning our cities well enough. And lastly is, you know, someone said, a very famous person actually said, injustice someplace is injustice everywhere. And that counts for environmental injustice as well.
So in a nutshell, as I understand it, the SANDAG plan put all the emphasis on freeways first, building more freeways, and mass transit was more of an afterthought, something that they would do much, much later on, and to a smaller degree than the freeways. Now, the court took a look at this, and essentially told SANDAG that their environmental impact report was inadequate because it failed to adequately address health impacts and some other things, climate change and so forth. What are you hearing from the folks at SANDAG? This was 20-1. What are they telling you about why they voted this way? And I might add, we did invite a SANDAG representative here who was not able to make it today. But what are the reasons for this?
I think they went down a path that they can't come back on, or that it's so hard for them to go back on. Mm-hmm. And that path is based on a lot of misinformation or lack of information. And that's what CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, really requires, is let's have a document to give the public and decision makers information so we can make better decisions, so we can know what we're doing. And the court found that that's what they're lacking in. Lacking information. That's the problem with their environmental document. They can still make a decision whether to do more freeways or more transit, but they should be doing so in an open fashion, getting all the information up front.
So the court faulted this for not being transparent, among other things.
And in fact, going a bit further, lack of information and providing misinformation.
Really?
And that's why they really need to work on those documents, and their decision-making was in error.
Yeah, now I know we've heard from at least one SANDAG member, Christine Alicio, a councilwoman in La Mesa, who's also an attorney, and she said this was about conflicting messages from the state, conflicting laws, and they felt they wanted the Supreme Court to work that out and clarify that. I guess the example that she gave was that Governor Schwarzenegger initially issued an executive order saying that we must meet certain goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by a certain time period. The state legislature then turned around and said, well, yes, we agree with that, but we need to go even further because new science shows the problem is even worse. So they kind of moved up some of the timetables, and she's trying to argue that that somehow is the legislature preempting the governor, even though it was really the same goal.
Right. This term of that the law is obscure or not clear. But the courts didn't find it that way. This was the argument that SANDAG used in court, and now they're spelling it out in their reasoning of why they want to appeal further to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Let's make it clear. The governor's executive order in 2005 gave us a goal. based on that goal, the legislature found that, gee, we need to have some help in that to make that goal or even go further. And that's when they passed AB 32, which gave us some benchmarks, in between benchmarks for 2020, 2035.
Right.
SANDAG, we immediately said, okay, they probably met at least the 2020 goals, or 2025 goals. Actually, they met those goals by counting that we would continue with a recession and we would buy lots of electric cars. Whether that happens or not, who knows? But we know that the prediction will accept that for 2020. From there, their prediction is that greenhouse gas emissions will continue to go up. In fact, 700% higher than the goals that Schwarzenegger has set. There's no conflict between these two goals. In fact, they're based on each other.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that SANDAG has met the 2020 goals and they don't have to deal with the 2050 goals is really ludicrous. It's insane.
Yeah, and really nobody in the legislature, the governor, anywhere is saying that they need to do that. This seems to be something SANDAG came up with on its own.
Completely on their own. And what's really crazy is we're talking about a plan that's called the 2050 Regional Transportation Plan.
And yet they're saying they don't need to meet the state's goals for 2050.
Yeah, that's how ridiculous their argument is.
Okay.
It's completely ridiculous argument that they don't have to address greenhouse gas emissions in 2050 because they met it for 2020.
So you've indicated that there are three major areas where this plan falls short. One of them is climate change, one of them is health, and one of them is economic justice. Let's talk about health for a moment. What are some of the health concerns here? I understand you've got some statistics and so forth to back this up.
Well, we know cars and trucks on our freeways, and highways and our roads are a major health hazard. Not only is it the most dangerous way to travel from one place to another, but it puts out a lot of pollution, not just greenhouse gas pollution, but also other gases that cause illness, asthma and cancer. We know that from a study that USC did in 2008 that people who live or children who live within a half mile of a freeway have an 80% higher chance of having asthma.
Children who live within a half mile of a freeway have an 80% higher chance of getting asthma. So to what degree was that addressed in the environmental impact report?
It wasn't. It wasn't, except to the point that there will be an impact. So other regional transportation plans in San Francisco area and in the LA, greater LA area did health impact analysis or studies.
Yeah.
We asked SANDAG to do the same because we felt, you know, San Diego should be treated similarly to other parts of California.
Right, we're healthy.
Right. They said no.
So
well,
they
didn't. We'll they didn't do it.
So they did no health impact analysis whatsoever in the SANDAG report?
No, not to the degree that we asked for, which is the standard that we want in California, is mm-hmm. to have some good assessment of what this plan will do to people's health. And if we're going to add more freeways, how many more asthma cases are we talking about?
Goodness.
How many more cancer cases are we talking about?
What are asthma rates like in San Diego right now compared to the rest of the state?
Well, we have some of the worst, of course, in Logan Heights area is some of the worst in the country. We still have a failing grade from the American Lung Association.
Failing grade from
even,
the American
even
Lung
Association. Even though we're next to the coast here.
So we have a failing grade from the American Lung Association, pockets that have some of the worst asthma in the country, and they don't think they need to analyze the impacts of more freeways on health.
Exactly, and that's where I think the failing comes from. So our elected officials that serve on the SANDAG board, people like Todd Gloria, people like Mayor Cox, people like Supervisor Ron Roberts, seems to be satisfied with continuing a failing grade. We've been asking for, come on, let's look at some alternatives so maybe you can get how about a C minus?
There we go. Now, you've also mentioned economic justice as an issue. Can you explain about that?
Well, we know that cars, driving cars is very expensive and keeping those roads up are very expensive. We have a hard time even filling all of our potholes. But our elected officials are very quick to build more lanes and more roads, which means more costs, initial costs, for one of the most costliest ways to get from one place to another. There's a myth that drivers pay their own way. That's a myth. they're supported by other taxes. Even though California has one of the highest tax rates for gasoline and toll roads and so forth, the cost recovery is about 34%. That's from the American Tax Foundation.
Now, as far as the economic justice aspect is concerned, Jack, I understand you have some figures about what the economic impact on a family can be if they don't have to have a car.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of talk about raising minimum wage and income for people. If you don't have to have a car, if you don't have to buy a car, that's equivalent to at least $5,000 a year savings, if not more.
Huge.
And if you do the math, if you work 40 hours a week all year long, that's equivalent to a pay increase of $3 an hour.
Wow.
So if we build our cities better so that people don't have to have cars, only need one car instead of two cars, you give one of those wage earners a $3 an hour pay increase without any cost to the employer, to anybody. And on top of that, people will be healthier as well.
Very significant. Thank you. Well, what about the low-income people out there? The county says they need to be able to drive places. We've got to build more freeways for them. What's your solution?
Well, they need some alternatives, and I think that's the key. We're pretty well vested in cars, and we're not going to get rid of cars and trucks anytime soon, and that's we know that. But we should have alternatives in other communities, other cities throughout the world, let alone in California, has figured that out and are trying to move and providing those alternatives. Because the person who's riding on a trolley, I should mention, not only is it more cost-effective and energy-effective, it's cost-effective for government. Their supplement from general tax is less than someone who's driving. The person who's driving is on welfare, and we need to get them off of welfare into other forms of transportation.
But also the high price of gasoline lately, that is taking a big chunk out of the average person's budget and certainly out of the low-income people's budget. I realize gas prices have dipped temporarily while OPEC is kind of playing some games here, but we all know it's going to go back up eventually. So what about those folks that are living out in Alpine or the rural areas? And I know I've talked to people who said they couldn't afford to go to their doctor. They didn't know how they were going to get in for a court appearance because they couldn't afford to put gas in their cars.
Right. Well, let me add some added figures there with regards to gasoline and the cost of auto transportation. For every dollar you spent on gasoline, since we don't produce gasoline in San Diego, 85 cents leaves our region. If you spent that dollar on transit, riding the trolley, 85 cents stays in our region because that money goes to maintaining the trolleys and paying for the driver.
It isn't just trolleys either. Transit can include, for example, improving bus services, say in rural areas where it's not practical to get a trolley there.
Right, and let's look at some other options since we're dealing with East County. And so we may not have a trolley line that goes out to Alpine, but we can have a better trolley or light rail system that starts in El Cajon.
Hmm.
So the way that would work is for someone who does live in Descanso in Pine Valley, they can use Uber, they could use buses or some other rideshare type of system, efficient system, to get into, let's say, El Cajon, where we have a better transit system, and jump on that and get into downtown. We need a system that is efficient, that is attractive, and light rail is really the way to go. Buses, Bus Rapid Transit is the new acronym for bus BRTs. The problem with BRTs is that the way Sandag is going about its implementation, they're using it as a disguise to build more freeway lanes.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem because if you build more lanes, even if you make it a diamond lane, even if you make it a bus lane, there's going to be more cars on the road. We shouldn't be investing in that. We have to reduce our vehicle miles traveled 15% from current levels if we're going to meet those goals in 2050 for greenhouse gas emissions. That's with a very high number of people switching to electric cars even.
Now, yeah, let's come back and talk about the greenhouse gas emissions and the climate change issue. How much difference could San Diego make toward reducing greenhouse gas emissions if they were to adopt, say, what the Cleveland National Forest would like to see as opposed to the plan that Sandag came up with?
This issue of greenhouse gases and world climate disruption is something that we all have to start from someplace. In America, in San Diego, our amount of greenhouse gas emissions per capita is extremely high compared to the rest of the world. If we can't change, if we cannot become a leader in that area, how can we ask anyone else to? We should be able to do that. We're supposed to be intelligent. In fact, the whole issue of greenhouse gas and CO2, that study was started here at Scripps in San Diego. That whole idea of climate change started in the 50s from here.
True. We have many of the top climate scientists in the whole world right here at Scripps Institute, at UCSD, these climate experts.
We have the brain trust to do that change. Unfortunately, we don't have the political leadership to make that change. And that's the real problem.
Let's talk about the political leadership. There were 20 people who voted to appeal this case to the California Supreme Court, and one who voted no. Let's start with the one who said no. I understand that it was Chuck Lowry, who is the deputy mayor, brand new, newly elected deputy mayor of Oceanside. How long had he been in office, Jack?
3 days.
3 days. And he was an alternate. He wasn't even supposed to be there.
Right. So the vote was actually 19 to 1. The 20 representatives on the Sandag board, made up of the 18 cities in the county, and then the two county board supervisors. Mm-hmm. And that makes up the 20 votes.
Okay.
So most of the representatives are the mayors of the individual cities, Mayor Cox, Mayor Abbott from Escondido, and then from San Diego, of course, Mayor Faulkner and Todd Gloria.
So in East County, it was Mayor Wells from El Cajon.
Jack Dale serves on the, though he's a councilman from Santee, Mayor Sessions from Lemon Grove.
Right. And then in La Mesa, it was not Mayor Madrid, now ex-Mayor Madrid, who actually has said he would have voted the other way. It was Councilwoman Christine Alicio, who's an attorney and
it's kind of odd. I don't know all the reasons why Mayor Madrid was taken off the Sandag board.
A lot of complicated politics on that one.
Right, which really shows how deep our problems are politically, that even strong Democrats that should be liberal and vote for the best thing for our communities and for the climate have failed to do so. Todd Gloria chairs the Transportation Committee for Sandag, and repeatedly, for years after year, he has put forward a plan that is not only hurting the climate issues, but also our home communities with more pollution.
Now, Todd Gloria, his vote counts really as more than one vote. Of these 20 votes, it's weighted based on population. So what percentage of the entire Sandag vote does the city of San Diego get?
For Todd Gloria alone, 20%, and with the other representative from City of San Diego, another 20%. So 40% of the weighted vote comes from San Diego alone because of the population in San Diego.
Yeah, I know that when Filner was mayor, he used to joke that with the City of San Diego, between him and if they picked up Art Madrid from La Mesa, maybe one other, they could control Sandag. But right now, it's totally the other way, it looks like, with this 20-to-1 imbalance.
Well, and I think that's important to point out there that we don't have to change all 20 votes. We need to change the culture of Sandag, in which they have a tendency to unanimously vote on things, pulling along people who want to think differently.
Because they want to look united. In the end, if they see they're going to be on the losing side of things, people will come around and just say, let's put forth a unanimous front. Is that what's happening
here? Well, they don't have a good dialogue. I don't think it's a good democratic process. Mm-hmm. You know, let me quote something from this appellate court decision. The error is prejudicial because it precludes informed public participation and decision making. That sentence was written at least four times in this appellate court decision. Mm. This is what Sandag leaders, our elected officials, are appealing. They don't want more information. They don't want to do these kind of studies.
Okay. So where can listeners out there, first of all, get more information, maybe read the decision, read the regional transportation plan, Jack?
If they go to our website, transitsandiego.org, there's all of our information, other things that our organization, the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, is doing, as well as the court papers. This decision from the appellate court is there. You can download it, along with other briefs. There's three briefs that amicus briefs that were submitted. from other folks in California. Those are all available so someone can learn more about this case locally in San Diego.
And if people want to take action, get involved, what can they do to make their voice heard, Jack?
They can help the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, but more simpler than that is when they see an elected official, regardless of whether they're represented on San Diego or not, they should make this point heard that, you know, why are we appealing this decision? Why are we not making things better in San Diego? How come we're not looking at other options?
Is there a cost factor involved? Are they opposing this because it would be just too expensive to make these changes? I mean, obviously it costs money to file an appeal to the state Supreme Court.
I think they're ignoring all those issues. They're using my tax money, your tax money, all of our tax monies to fight this ridiculous case in which they've already lost in two courts. And it's crazy in my mind because all the courts are saying is you need to look at alternatives. You need to have a better plan so that we have an informed decision-making process. So my saying here is SANDAG is using our money to continue to be ignorant. And to me, that's just not the responsible leadership in our county.
Listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been talking with Jack Hsu, who is the president of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, about SANDAG's decision to appeal to the California Supreme Court, a decision by the appellate court and the lower court, which upheld Cleveland National Forest's legal challenge to SANDAG's regional transportation plan. You can find out more about that at transitsandiego.org, which has all of the information from the Cleveland National Forest Foundation. And I want to thank you very much, Jack, for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Today I'm interviewing La Mesa Police Captain Dan Willis, author of Bulletproof Spirit, the first responder's essential resource for protecting and healing mind and heart. My guest, who is a homicide investigator and former SWAT commander, has developed a wellness program providing emotional survival to first responders. Much needed. Welcome, Captain Willis. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Let's start with your 25 years of service in East County. What have you experienced and witnessed about how emotional trauma affects first responders? And I know that includes police officers, firefighters, EMTs, emergency room personnel, and soldiers. What I'm asking is, what provoked you to write this book?
Well, over my 26 years, I've seen not only within myself, but in so many of my colleagues, how the adverse effects of the job of being immersed in heartache all the time, seeing so much violence and death and suffering, how that really does take a tremendous emotional toll on those who serve. And often it's very toxic and debilitating to their spirit.
and it can lead to depression, to substance abuse,
right,
burnout and cynicism. Far more than half the people who start a first responder profession never finish to full retirement.
Really?
So there really is a disheartening status of how well our first responders are doing, because a lot of them are really suffering and need help.
Now, what's the symptom that you see the most often in your own staff?
There's several. For me personally, it was becoming what I call emotionally dead. Mm-hmm. I noticed after about 7 or 8 years on that I really didn't have any feelings anymore. I wasn't happy. I wasn't sad. I didn't feel connected to anybody or anything. I didn't feel engaged with my wife and stepkids. Just very numb inside. And looking back on it, that was a way to try to survive in the midst of heartache and dealing with people's tragedies. Unfortunately, that obviously plays havoc with your personal relationships.
Right.
And that was kind of a wake-up call of, this isn't normal. This isn't right. Mm-hmm. And I really need to look at myself, become more self-aware of how the job's adversely affecting me, and do something proactive about it.
Right. And is that also what you see in your staff, people working with you?
That's a very common one, is this emotional numbing. But another very significant symptom is sleep disorders. Most first responders get about 4 hours of sleep, maybe 5 on average, and people really need 8 or 9 to be able to function normally, mm-hmm. to process stress and to feel and be well. And if you're getting 4 or 5 hours of sleep day in and day out on top of dealing with the acute stress and the trauma of the job, I mean, that's going to have a significant impact on your quality of life and your overall wellness. Another sign that I see is anger. That people tend to get angry at the smallest of things, things that would never bother them before. And that's just a sign, another sign that they're not processing stress in a positive, constructive mm-hmm. manner.
So that really brings us to talking about the official diagnosis of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And I know that the symptoms that you've named are connected to that. But what do you think that the public needs to know about PTSD?
The public, I think, really needs to understand that there's approximately 120,000 police officers in America who are going to work every single day with full symptoms of PTSD, and many of them not really realizing what they have. And the symptoms go far beyond what we were just talking about. That they are acute panic attacks, mm-hmm. Nightmares, reliving trauma that they've experienced over and over and over again. It becomes very, very debilitating. So PTSD is really a byproduct of all the negative things that we see when we don't train our first responders how to protect, heal, and nurture their spirit. And there are really some effective treatments for mm-hmm. PTSD out there. And writing the book was just a way of trying to get, in part, that message out, that we really need to look for help and go ask for it. That PTSD is not a weakness. It's really not about what's wrong with you. It's all about what happened to you. Mm-hmm. And it really is an injury to your brain's ability to process mm-hmm. a traumatic event. And there are therapies that will help your brain heal and put that event in its proper perspective so you can move on without the memories being crippling.
Well, it sounds like another main point is that the event doesn't have to have happened directly to you. You can experience vicarious trauma by witnessing it.
Oh, very much so. Not only just witnessing it from our brother, sister, officer, but often we suffer with our victims as well. I mean, if you spend 5, 7, 8 hours with a traumatized sexual assault victim who was brutally raped, how do you go home and be a happy, engaged father, mother, or spouse? I mean, you really can't. And the ways that we try to deal with it without any proper training is often substance abuse, isolating ourselves from our family so we can just kind of mm-hmm. deal with it on our own. And these things are really self-destructive and aren't helpful at all.
Right. Okay, well, let's go to your book. What are some of the main lessons or strategies described in Bulletproof Spirit? Without giving a spoiler, can you explain to us what kinds of strategies you suggest and promote?
Well, the first and probably the most critical principle is to learn to become more self-aware. When I go around teaching emotional survival to first responder agencies, I always ask them, now raise your hand if the job has negatively affected you, affected your health and wellness, your view on people and life, and your quality of your life. And every single person always raises their hand immediately. So if the job is adversely affecting us very negatively, there's got to be something that we can do on the proactive side that will help counteract some of that. But if we're not aware, because a lot of these negative aspects are very slow, they're very insidious as far as how they affect us. I like to call it, it's like a cancer of the spirit. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, over time, you've become someone that your loved ones no longer recognize. And at that point, often it's too late. So I like to tell people to engage their loved ones, solicit feedback, ask them, how is the job changing me? How am I different? And if you see me not being myself, please come to me and ask me what's going on and give me that information so I can do something about it before it is too late.
And do you suggest any strategies for the doing something about it?
The book itself has over 40 wellness strategies and emotional survival methods. Basically, it's up to the individual officer to take information such as in Bulletproof Spirit and find what works for them. And I've done all 40 that I describe in the book. Some are more effective than others. But the main thing is to find things that are going to be life-affirming for you throughout your career, because a career can be life-depleting. Right. So often first responders stop doing the things they loved before they became a cop.
Oh, that's a good example.
So you got to keep the friends that you had outside of the agency. Do those things that you loved. For me, it was being in nature, bike riding, hiking, going to national parks. I love swimming in the ocean. Mm-hmm. A lot of those things I kind of stopped doing when I first became a cop. And when you start doing those things again and be active and force yourself to be engaged in your personal life and with the people that are your lifeline of support, you can weather a lot of the storms of the spirit that you're going to face.
Well, that leads us to your training program, which is on emotional survival and wellness. And you've described strategies for getting there and for staying well mentally and physically, because I know the two are connected. Where has the gap been traditionally in these areas? What kind of training do you believe first responders usually receive, and where is it lacking?
Well, that's a great question, because traditionally the only training first responders receive is for your mind and the body. You know, they teach you about the laws and how to handle certain instances and procedures, and they will tell you to be physically fit, but they have always neglected the most important part of us, which is our spirit. And our spirit, I like to define as everything that's not of our mind and our body. It's what helps us to process stress, to overcome trauma, and to want to serve with compassion. It's our resiliency to acute stress. It's our motivation and inspiration to want to devote ourselves to a life of public service. And our spirit is really the foundation of our mental health, our physical health, our emotional health. And if we neglect the spirit, then we're neglecting our overall health and well-being. So the emphasis of the book, which I hope will become more and more part of the curriculum in training first responders, is to teach them to nurture and to protect their spirit, because the spirit is really going to keep their mind and their body and their emotions well. So the emphasis is more on those things that are life-affirming, which breathes life into your spirit, which brings joy back into your life, which helps renew your mind, your emotions, and your inspiration and motivation to keep wanting to serve year in and year out.
I know that you are going to retire soon from being a La Mesa police captain. Are you planning to train first responders yourself as you move through your retirement?
Oh, definitely. In fact, for the past 10 years, I've been an instructor at the San Diego Police Academy. And with the publication of the book that just came out a few weeks ago, I've already been booked to teach in Kansas regarding emotional survival and the strategies that are in the book. So I hope as the word gets out, I'll be asked to travel around the country and present training seminars to help get the word out about the essential and critical need to offer that kind of training to protect and heal the spirit.
What feedback have you gotten from the people who have received your training?
Pretty much universally, I hear, I really wish I had this kind of information when I started my career. So, I mean, people really do know how negative and harmful the job can be, but we've never really had anything to help us through it.
Right.
So now, hopefully this is, that, and our first responders will find this very, very useful and meaningful to them.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a really much needed project.
Oh, thank you.
One last question. Is there another book in the wings, or are you going to focus on promoting what you've already written?
There's not really another book right now. I really want to devote myself, now that I'm at the end of my career, to helping to protect and help those who are going to be coming after me. I mean, we all depend on first responders for our life and well-being, and so often the general public just really doesn't understand how much they're suffering in their service. I mean, they're the only ones that protect and give life to people, and often it's their own life, their own emotional. Absolutely.
Right.
So I really want to continue my devotion to helping those I've served with and those following me, to teach them what I've learned through trial and error, mostly error, but what has really worked not only with me, but what I've seen with other first responders. So hopefully they'll make it to a full retirement, be prideful about the service they've been able to do throughout their adult life, and be happy that they were able to affect so many people for the good and in a positive way, and be happy and healthy themselves.
Would you like to finish with a word of hope for the first responders themselves, if they happen to be listening?
Well, the book offers a tremendous message of hope, a very positive message that you don't have to be victims of your career. I mean, so often it seems like first responders kind of hope for the best. They get involved in a fatal shooting, a critical incident happens, and the agency is kind of there for the first week or so, and then it's not talked about, and everyone just kind of quietly, gee, I hope that person gets over it. I hope they're okay. We can't just hope anymore. Suicide is the number one cause of death for police officers every single year in the United States. Nearly 200 kill themselves. And we can't just hope for the best and lose so many devoted heroes. It's a senseless shame, especially when there's information that can really help them.
Okay, so the information is out there. They just have to find it, and they can do that through your book.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, our time is up. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
If you would like more information on Captain Dan Willis and Bulletproof Spirit, please visit firstresponderwellness.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County has events ranging from a winery concert to a walk up Mount Healy.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a concert by the famed British rock band Herman's Hermits at Sequan, a photo tour in the Anza Borrego Desert, and a Martin Luther King Jr. birthday concert in Lemon Grove.
So stay tuned for all these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
The Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association will host a walk to the top of Mount Helix on Saturday, January 3rd. Meet at 10 a.m. at the fire station on Viviera and Mount Helix for the walk. Stroll up Mount Helix Drive with your friends and neighbors. There will be refreshments waiting for your enjoyment at the top. Children and well-behaved dogs are welcome.
The Waits will be performing at the San Pasquale Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa, 8364 La Mesa Boulevard, on Saturday, January 3rd at 7 p.m. The Waits, an acoustic duo on guitar and mandolin, play and sing a blend of folk, bluegrass, country, classic rock, and more.
The largest outdoor ice skating rink in Southern California is located at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine, and during the holidays, it's open from noon to 10 p.m. from December 20th through January 4th. Whether you're an experienced skater looking for space for spins, twirls, and jumps, or a novice in need of rental skates, you'll find ice available through January 4th at the Viejas Ice Rink, which is larger than the skating rink at Rockefeller Center.
Mission Trails Regional Park offers free concerts in the Visitor Center Theater on Sundays at 3 p.m. Upcoming performances include guitarist James Earp on January 4th and the Santee Community Chorus on January 18th.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. If you love to fish, you may want to mark your calendars for the trout reopener at Santee Lakes on January 10th and 11th, when the lakes will be stocked with 2,000 pounds of rainbow trout. Prizes will be awarded for the five biggest fish caught. There will also be a breakfast sponsored by the Lions Club and prizes including fishing poles, tackle boxes, bicycles, camping gear, and fishing passes. For those lucky fishing folks who catch a 5-pound trout or larger, you will also be entered in the grand prize drawing for a flat-screen TV. For details, visit santeelakes.com.
The legendary British rock band Herman's Hermits and its original lead singer, Peter Noone, will be performing 2 concerts on January 17th at Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon. Showtimes are at 6:30 and 8 p.m. Noone's classic hits included I'm Into Something Good, Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, I'm Henry VIII, I Am, and Can't You Hear My Heartbeat. Herman's Hermits sold over 60 million recordings, including 14 single hits and 7 albums that win gold. For concert tickets and details, visit sequan.com.
A Martin Luther King Jr. birthday concert will be held on Saturday, January 17th at 5 p.m. on Lemon Grove's Main Street Promenade. That's at 3443 Main Street in Lemon Grove. The concert is a special feature of the Lemon Grove Live Concert Series and will feature the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir of San Diego Ensemble members. Admission is free.
Nature and landscape photographers Ernie and Katie Cowan will lead a Cactus and Canyons photo tour to explore some of the most scenic and secret places of Enza Borrego Desert State Park on Saturday, January 17th. This all-day hike runs from 8:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. The tour is designed for photographers to enhance your techniques and transform landscape photography into works of art, not just snapshots. You'll visit narrow and winding slot canyons to learn proper exposure, lens selection, and composition in the morning. Then visit other park locations in the afternoon with a lunch stop at a local restaurant in Borrego Springs. The tour is open to all skill levels. For more details and tickets, visit theabf.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.